because we're seeing these nice pictures from Cairo, let's take you to Tehran now, where already Friday 1st here in Tehran has started. Just on your screen, you're seeing the two pictures there. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, delivering a speech there in front of a huge crowd.
حافظ سره و مبلغ رسالاته بشیر رحمته و نذیر نقمته سیدنا و نبینا ابوالقاسم المصطفى محمد و على آله الاطیبین الاطهرین المنتجبین الهداة المهديين المعصومين المكرمين سيما بقية الله في الأراضين.
May peace be upon all of the prophets.
ونصلي ونسلم على أئمة المسلمين وإمامة المتضعفين وهداة المؤمنين.
For all those oppressed, all the faithful.
أوصيكم عباد الله بتقوى الله.
I call on you to depend and rely on God.
و خواهران عزیز، نمازگزاران گرامی و خودم را.
I recommend all of you prayers and also myself. I recommend us all to observe divine piety.
امروز
today
شهادت علی ابن موسی
marks the martyrdom of the eighth Shia Imam Imam Reza, peace be upon him.
روزهای قبل هم یاد
the previous days also we remembered the departure of the Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his household.
صلى الله عليه وآله وسلم.
May peace and blessings of God be upon him and his progeny. And also, it was the martyrdom of the great son of Imam Hassan. Our people mark these occasions, these great, bitter, and painful incidents of the history.
به شما
I'd like to express my condolences to you, praying believers and all Shiites across the world and also the entire Muslims around the world. Also, I'd like to the God tells this prophet that piety, the need for piety and observing piety, this is being addressed to even the Holy Prophet himself, who needs to observe piety, to have God on your mind, to be careful with your words and deeds and manners, even your thoughts. You need to be careful about. This is the meaning of piety. If this is achieved, this, if piety is observed, then all the closed doors will be open. God Almighty, in all stages, will go to the assistance of the people who observe piety. The 10-day period called the 10-day dawn in Iran this year, and the 22nd Iranian calendar, Bahman, or 11th of February, the 12th of February, there is a different atmosphere in the air this year, because the people, after years of their struggle, they're now witnessing that the reflection of their voice, the cry, their strong cry out of being oppressed, this is now being heard elsewhere in the world of Islam. It is being strongly heard now.
حوادث امروز
today's developments in the north of Africa and those in Egypt and Tunisia and some other countries in the region, for us, the people of Iran, it's got a different meaning. It's got a special meaning. This is the very same thing that has always been attributed to as the incidence of Islamic vigilance and awareness on the occasion of the great Islamic revolution of Iran. Today this is emerging and it's out in the open. Now, both this 10-day period is significant. And today I would like to, in the first sermon, mention something about a revolution. In the second sermon, I would also like to kind of touch upon developments in Egypt and Tunisia, and later on, if you allow me, I will address the Arab world in Arabic. And I will address the Arab-speaking Muslims in the region. Well, regarding our revolution, regarding this great incident caused and created by the Iranian nation, I should say, this is, we can take lessons from this. In the first place, it's an image or a picture of world events for us to see arrogant powers, building powers in the world, and domineering powers, to see what they wanted and what happened, what they gained, what they were going after, and what eventually happened in practice. And later on, there are two features of the Islamic Revolution that relate to our own era. I will later deal with that. In the first part of the sermon that relates to depiction and adaptability of the present, actually of the status quo and its comparison with what the ruling powers of the world were pursuing, in this section I should say, the conquerors and victors of the First and Second World War, there were mainly a number of European countries together with America. For this strategic region of the Middle East, they had a fixed policy. Because this region, both in terms of geopolitical location, assumes importance, and it also is the linking point and crossroads of the continents of Europe, Africa, and Asia, and it's also one of the largest reservoirs of the whole world oil reserves, where this vital channel, which is funneled into all industries that are industrial countries that dominate the world, this is actually the oil reservoir of the whole world in this region. Both in terms of nations, it has age-old regions and nations with a long historical background. Therefore, for this region, they adopted a policy, and that policy was to the effect that in this region, countries and political units should exist in this region that have these characteristics. In the first place, they must be weak. Secondly, they need to be antagonistic and inimical toward one another. They should never get along. They should never stand united together. That's why you saw the policy of strengthening Arab nationalism or Turkish nationalism or Iranian nationalism in the course of continuous year after year. This policy was pursued. In the third place, they need two nations where political rulers need to be their own puppets. They need to be obedient. They actually must be those who bow to world powers' pressure. And this is what they actually did in practice. In the fourth place, in terms of economy, they need to be consumers of these nations. That means the oil that almost they get these oil resources from them at a very, very low price, almost at no price. The outcome of out of that price need to be actually spent on imports and consumption so that Western industrial countries would be further strengthened. These were among the policies. In the fifth place, scientifically, they need to be retarded, and they shouldn't be given the chance to advance and progress scientifically. These are each titles and topics, and each one of these we can actually write a book about, explaining, actually elaborating on each of these aspects I'm mentioning here, to the effect how in Iran and elsewhere in the world, they checked the progress and deepening of know-how in science. Well, culturally speaking, they need to be copycats of the European culture. In terms of military, they need to be vulnerable and weak. They need to be kept weak. Morally speaking, they need to be corrupt and decadent. They should undergo various kinds of moral decadence. I mean, the people in this region. Also, on faith-based principles, it needs to be superficial at that level, and also only suffice to some ceremonial and individual, so as to speak, kind of practicing of religion. This was the picture they had created for themselves of this region. For this, they adopted their policies accordingly, and maybe thousands of hours they used the Western strategists they sat together, they looked into it carefully, they planned for it, and their people here were appointed in countries in this region, and through those people they tried to push through all these policies. With this analysis, you can better understand the manners of Reza Shah and his son Muhammad Reza and Hassan Mustafa Kemal in Turkey and other people. This was what they had on their mind, and they were successful. They were successful until before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Apart from certain periods, short periods of time, and that in only parts of these, they emerged victorious. Only in a few junctures, like in Egypt, for example, for a few years, there was a national government of power in Iran, in other forms and elsewhere in other forms. But generally speaking, when you look at it on an absolute basis, in all these areas, they progressed up until before the victory of the Islamic Revolution. But all of a sudden, this great, let's call it, explosion took place, and this disrupted the whole thing. A man, a wise, prominent, prudent, jurisprudent, struggling, and brave, and the man who took risks, he emerged among the Iranian people, called Imam Khomeini.
حقیقتاً
In fact, the presence of this man, the emergence of this man, and the training offered by this man was the job of God Almighty. This was a divine decision and faith for this to happen. And the people of Iran, too, were prepared. They welcomed this. They took risks. They entered the scene. They gave their lives, their properties. They went through an ordeal very successfully. And the Islamic Revolution took place. All these calculations and plans were disrupted. All those calculations got disrupted and rendered ineffective. Islamic Revolution in Iran emerged strongly, and it continued strongly in the first 2-3 years. It was not like this for a fervent zeal to emerge in the first 2-3 years and then fade away. That's not the case. It continued strongly, and later on we'll talk about this continuation and we'll mention a few points about it.
Now
the Imam stood fast like a mountain, and the people also very strongly stood behind him. The enemy, actually the enemy front, because there was not one individual front, there was a front of enemies. They tried their best, they tried their utmost, whatever they could, they did whatever they could. From street clashes to ethnic clashes to military coup d'etats to imposition of the 8-year Iraq-imposed war on Iran, and also economic embargoes and sanctions, also launching this psychological war machine the past 32 years. For 32 years, they have been launching this campaign against the Iranian nation, the Islamic Revolution in the Iran. The psychological war has been going on for 52 years. All this happened. They lied, they made insults, they spread rumors, they tried to create a wedge and divide us, to push us to go astray inside the country. The designs they were, and the objectives they were pursuing in the first place, it was the collapse of the revolution and the Islamic establishment. Their main aim was to topple, was to ouster the Islamic Revolution. Their next aim was, if the toppling of the Islamic establishment does not take place, if it is not possible, then they will try to kind of transform and kind of change the revolution to something else. On the face of it, the revolution remains there, but the spirit of the revolution would fade away and would be destroyed. They tried to their utmost. Again, the last scenario was this latest post-election incidents last year. It was an effort for a number of people inside the country because of their selfishness and the love for themselves and for power. These moral ailments, if you will, they fell victim to this plot. The enemy was trying to, I have said this time and again, that they have been running, they have been actually managing this stage and planning all these things. It was always outside of our borders. It's always been like this, and it still is. Inside the country, some people cooperated with them, some of them knowingly, some of them unknowingly. And the third objective has been, and it still is, to do something so if the Islamic establishment remains, then some weak elements that can be penetrated, those people could be used and try to actually to address these people regarding the issues in the country. Then they wanted an establishment to be formed and to continue so that in a way it is weak and not as strong. Obedience is what they needed, has to be, not to stand up against, not to rise against America. This is part of their این objectives.
این کارها، این مراحل گونه
all these and different phases and stages so far have failed to date. They have not been able to achieve those. Of course, they have tried their utmost. They have embarked on various activities. They have taken various moves. I will mention part of them during my sermons. They spared no effort, but they did not succeed. People were aware. We have elites among our people. We have great people. Our officials are working well. It was not possible for our enemy to fulfill its designs and objectives. The revolution has threaded its path and has progressed. Now, what happened in the revolution? This is important to take heed of. The revolution that took place in Iran,
تغییراتی را به وجود آورد از لحاظ عمق
caused some changes when you look at it in terms of depth. These are significant and these are fundamental changes, if you will. Based on these changes, you can push the society forward and make great changes directed up ahead. These fundamental, this basis was actually set on a strong basis. I will mention some of these changes. Of course, everyone is aware of these. We all know about these. It's before our eyes. We can see them. But as God Almighty has said in Holy Quran, God tells us, directs us at the sun. The sun is in front of eyes, and God swears by the sun for us to pay attention that this phenomenon is so great for us to recognize. Therefore, it's necessary to mention these for us to pay attention, to be attentive. Before the revolution, ruling body was actually the one which was deeply antagonistic toward Islam. They didn't look at the surface, but depth-wise, they were actually planning to eradicate the roots of faith in the hearts of the people. We have indications, memories, lots of them I have in my mind. No, I don't know. We don't have time for that here. The revolution made, let's say, a U-turn, actually. There was a sea change, and Islam was adopted as the major axis for running of the affairs and management of the country's affairs. The teachings and principles of Islam, they were adopted as the yardstick and as indices for accepting or rejecting the laws in the country. And as this U-turn was made based on Islamic teachings, before the Islamic revolution, the country was dependent politically. That means the government, be it Mohammad Reza himself, the king, or various organizations, they were all waiting for an American order. We have lots of proof for this. Certain individual leaves Iran, goes to America, like Dr. Amini. He went to America to convince Americans so that he becomes prime minister. And he came back to Iran and became prime minister. After a couple of years, when the king, the Shah, who opposed him, he went to the U.S. and he convinced Americans to actually fire him. And he came back to Iran and that person was fired as prime minister. To choose a prime minister, the king, the head of the state, needed the consent of the U.S.
در بسیاری از مسائل شاه
in many other issues the
سفیر آمریکا و
Iranian king called the American and the British embassy
کاخ خود
invited him to his own palace in order to kind of try to make decisions together. If they were opposed to it, he would not make a decision. This was this political independence at that time. He was obedient to the U.S. Before the U.S., he was obeying the British Jewish orders, Reza Khan was appointed, actually was came to power by, with the help of the British, and when they saw that he's no more of use, they themselves ousted him, and they had his son back onto the throne. This was the situation before the revolution. Now, when the revolution took place, there was this full political independence. That means today, in this world, among all these great powers, there is not one single power that you can say they can claim that their wish and their will has any impact on the will and decision of the Iranian people.
این نکته به خصوص یعنی ایستادگی استقلال از
independence, steadfastness and political dignity, this has the highest attraction for world people. That's why you see world peoples, they have this respect for the Iranian nation. It's mainly related to this part, this political independence. Before the revolution, the government was imperial, it was a kingdom. On the contrast, you see, democracy. In a kingdom, people have no role. In a democracy, people have the, all the affairs in their hands. Before the revolution, it was hereditary. One person died and then another person was replaced. And people had no role in this transition of power. They had to accept it, whether they liked it or not. But in the Islamic Republic, thanks to the Islamic Revolution, it's selective. People elect. People pick. It's people's taste, people's demand that decides. Before the Islamic Revolution, the government was a dictatorship. I remember one of our friends in Pakistan came to me secretly to Mashhad, and he was talking to me. He said that this certain statement they were reading it in a park with their friends, and he asked me, why in a park you're reading a statement or communicating inside a park? Why is that? We could never imagine one person to have one of these communicators or flyers in his pocket with some criticism of the establishment of the then government and be able to walk freely. This was the situation, the security situation at that time. The revolution, the Islamic revolution, brought about this era of criticism, of correction, of giving warnings and advice, and even opposition. This is what the Islamic Republic brought for the people. In the past 32 years, it has been so, even in the early years of the Islamic Revolution. Before the revolution, reliance on science and technology was totally, it was totally relied on the West. I have said time and again that a number of our military plane parts that were out of order or out of use, they needed repair or replacement. They'd never allowed Iranian engineers of the Air Force to actually uninstall those parts and see what's wrong with that. They never allowed them to touch those parts. They put them in a plane and they took it to America and they brought one more and replaced it, or they repaired it themselves. The industry that existed was only assembly. At assembly level, there was no initiative, no innovation. following the Islamic revolution, this self-confidence, this national self-reliance appeared, the presence of a large number of prominent great scientists in various fields. We have scientists inside the country that internationally you can see the like of them, you can see a very few the like of those scientists. They have progressed well. They're mostly young people.
قبل از انقلاب
before the revolution
ایران در مسائل جهان حتی در مسائل منطقه
when it came to international issues even in regional issues Iran played no role.
یک کشور تحقیر شده ای بود.
It was a humiliated country. It could not leave any impact on any affairs. After the Islamic revolution, this dignity and magnanimity of this nation and their impact and influence in the regional countries' affairs, it dazzled the enemies. They have confessed to this. You can see today in the websites where you see foreign news, they are constantly talking about Iran's influence and Iran's presence in regional issues. This is being mentioned
even with various.
They have their own incentives, which might be wrong, but they confess to this. Before the revolution, culturally speaking, we're only copycats, but after the Islamic revolution, this cultural encroachment was considered as a threat. And there are so many other issues like this. These are fundamental issues. When in a country these pillars, these foundations are set, then this country can be hopeful to actually base a new, a novel civilization on these foundations.
Now
each one of these features or characteristics in a way attracted the attention of other world nations. They look at you, they get attracted to you, they admire you. And most important of all is the issue of political independence and resistance against
دشمنان
بلیر of the enemies.
از یک مقام غربی نقل کنم
to make quotation from a western official
از قول این سیاست مدارا و معارف غربی چیزی بگم.
I'm not going to actually I'm supposed to quote them, but this is really interesting to pay attention.
This is
there are two things
در میان مسلمان ها دست بگرده
if this spreads among Muslims then Muslim countries in various parts of the world if they are aware of these two then all of those western taboos
در هم خواهد شکست و باطل
will be disrupted and will prove useless. And what are those two?
متفکر غربی
این هر رو Western thinker says one of them is the constitution of the Islamic Republic.
که این قانون اساسی یک حکومت مردمی
basic law
امروزی
is a progressive and democratic government of the contemporary world and also religious faith. This makes it possible for world Muslims to see that this is possible, that it's possible to have a government that is both progressive and up to date and advanced. At the same time, it is totally faith-based. This is what the constitution makes it possible and proves it. This is one thing. And the second point is the record of the political, military, and scientific achievements list of the Islamic Republic. If Muslims see this, they will see that that has been made possible.
میگه این امکان و وقوع نسبی
که هم ممکن
هم در ایران امروز
it says it is possible in today's Islamic Iran. You can see relatively that this has happened. He says that this
ملت‌های مسلمان از این
Muslim nations are aware of this
این نظام سازی را
they say the creation of this system, then you can never stop the creation of this revolution. This is what has happened now. Today you can say this has happened. Of course, this hasn't happened today. It has been over 30 years. Gradually, in the minds of the world people, this is gradually instilled in the minds of people, then it gets developed and mature, and this is it emerges like what you see in North Africa and elsewhere in the world.
البته خود غربی ها اشتباهات
Westerners themselves have made political mistakes.
اشتباهات سیاسی هم کمک کرد به جمهوری اسلامی. ببینید
helped the Islamic establishment. You can see in, when it comes to nuclear activities of Iran, was Westerners mistake Iran's nuclear activities in order to confront them. They Iranized it, they had a lot of campaign and they pressured and said that the Islamic Republic of Iran must do away with its nuclear activities. Well, there were two points. In the past 7 years, this is the time they have been trying and putting pressure. Two things got clarified for world people. The first one is that Iran has been able to make unbelievable, unexpected progress in its nuclear activities. And the second point is that despite all these pressures, Iran has stood firm and does not retreat. Well, this is the benefit of the Iranian nation. Now all the world knows that America, Europe, and their aides and their followers, with all the pressure they have exerted, they have not been able to overcome the Islamic Republic and push it back. This actually was caused by the enemies of Iran. The Iranian people came to be known, their skills, their progresses. Elsewhere also they did the same thing. They raised Balahu, they said they made this cry that we want to boycott gasoline. We're importers. We're an importer of gasoline. We still are. They said that we want to stop this. And they made such a Balahu and raised some cries and had this campaign. The analysts predicted and said that there will be unrest and tension in Iran, people will do this and that, and this caused Iranian officials to think of further producing gasoline. And today, based on the report that I have, of course, until the next few days, the country will be totally independent from imports of gasoline.
گزارشی که به من دادن
based on the report given to me, even after that we can export gasoline, and I will have the order of exporting gasoline. Well, this campaign of theirs proved beneficial to the Iranian people, and world observers saw this. It's been true like this in all areas, and the sanctions of arms during the war, it was like this, and creating this parallel extremist Islamic movement, it was the same story. In our neighborhood, they came in. They created this extremist Islamic movement in our neighborhood in order to harm the Islamic revolution, and now it's actually a bane of their existence now. They don't know how to cure that problem, to how to remove that problem, and bring about faith-based sectarian division was the same story. In the post-election events, they said that the Islamic Republic is gone, it's the end of it, and differences are out there, and this and that happened. But finally they saw that the people of Iran had overcame all this. February 11th last year, also another day, 1 month before it, they were among, we call them days of God, to the true sense of the word. The people's hearts, God took them out to the streets, and the people of Iran showed its dignity and magnanimity. Whatever they do,
به ضررشون تمام می شود.
It proves detrimental, and this will be the same in the future too. These are the facts on the ground. This is what you see in the real world. What they wanted and see what happened, what they achieved.
و اما اون قسمت دوم
که عرض کردم
باید بگم
I should mention is that
در هر پدیده ای اگر بخواهیم ما اهمیت این پدیده رو تشخیص بدیم
actually talk about the importance of this phenomenon and the success of its progress. We should look and see how far this phenomenon has been able to set an example, to serve as an example and as a model, and how far it has been steadfast and resisted and has stood firm. It's the same about revolutions.
اگر بخواهد تأثیر
the revolution wants to be influential and to impact the minds and deeds of others and serve as an example,
این خصوصیاتی باید داشته باشد.
Then it needs to have certain characteristics, the most important one of which is this very resistant steadfastness. If this is there, then the Islamic, then the revolution will set an example for others. Or else, if there's only some sparks elsewhere, they get turned off. They cannot set as an example. They cannot be that effective. They cannot actually push others to follow them. This is how our Islamic revolution has been. A revolution has been able to inspire hope, to set an example. And this is because of stability, resistance, and steadfastness, and insisting on the major principles of the Islamic group that the late Imam said. We resisted, we withstood. I should also cite a few examples in the same connection. One is this, the nature of Islamic. Our late Imam first of all said that our revolution is based on Islam. In the whole world, there was lots of campaign and propaganda. They said that being Islamic and being democratic, they do not match. They said that this is retardedness, this is moving backward, this is retrograde. Islamic teachings cannot be implemented and all those
and
some other people echoed their voices inside the country. They wrote articles, they wrote books, they spread rumors to the fact that Islamic in order to actually make the Islamic Republic run a retreat from its principles, but the Islamic Republic Iran resisted and withstood all those. So yes, we are Islamic and we are proud of that, and we prove that the weight of salvation for mankind is the very same thing. So with a loud voice, this is what we have announced to the whole world.
امروز بعد از 32 سال شما نگاه
کنید look at our society.
رفتارها از روز اول
the manners, the approaches since the very first day, if they are not more Islamic, at least they look the same as what they were in the early days of the Islamic Revolution, our youths. There are people who never visited the Imam, they don't remember anything about the revolution days and the post-war, but their abidance by the Islamic principles, they're sticking more strongly to those than some of our older people. The officials are proud of this Islamic nature. In the past 32 years, of course, lots of efforts were made, even inside the government apparatus. There were individuals who tried to actually, in a zigzag manner, try to push the nation to corners and go astray, but this didn't happen. and this is one example. Another instance is the issue of the rule of people. Since the outset, the late Imam Khomeini announced that it's the people who need to have their say, be it in the in choosing the Islamic Republic or in devising the constitution or the law, in the assembly of experts, in the picking of the MPs and the presidents in all areas. After 32 years after the Islamic victory of the Islamic Revolution, we have had 33 elections together with referendums. In 32 years, we have had 32 or 33 times people have gone to the polling stations and they have picked, you can say, one election every year. This is really important. It's people's selection power. During the war, the war was being bombed and rocketed. The elections were held in cities where they were being targeted by missiles and rockets of Saddam's regime in that war. The elections did not stop. They were held even in those days. One of the parliamentary elections, pressure was made so that for their own political reasons, they could kind of delay the holding of the election, but they did not succeed. Up until now, the elections in the Islamic Republic has never been delayed for one single day. This is democracy. The very first day, the Imam said, and the Islamic Revolution insisted on this principle. We never accepted to do away and dispense with democracy and the rule of people. Today, the officials, also the experts, the assembly of experts who appoint the leader and also the parliament, the assemblies elsewhere, the councils, they are all picked by the people. Various currents also came to power. We can't say there was only one group of people. There were various kinds of political biases and inclinations in the past few presidents that have come to office. You can see everyone has his own inclination, but they were all picked by the people. Another instance is an instance of social justice. Since the very beginning, Imam Khomeini spoke of justice. Well, social justice is tougher than all of these. To maintain democracy and other activities that have taken place inside the Islamic establishment, the establishment of social justice is really tough, really difficult. I cannot say that until now we have been able to fully establish social justice. No, that's not true. We still are far away from that. That justice that Islam expects of us and what exists in our society, it's too far still, but moving towards social justice has not been checked, and this is continuing, and day after day it has intensified, and today movement towards social justice has gained momentum compared to previous years and periods. One of the greatest instances of social justice is the distribution, the proportionate distribution of the opportunities available in the country. In governments that are negligent of this social justice, they rely and they emphasize on certain class of people or certain areas of the country. But within the Islamic Republic, whatever the further we move, we feel this more strongly. Villages are being taken care of, far remote cities and towns, small towns are being taken care of and reached out to. You can see lots of housing, construction of housing units and roads in remote areas and villages, linking roads and various kinds of communication, power lines, water, drainage system, telephone communication, other facilities are all distributed throughout the country. The visits that government officials make to different provinces and cities and towns, some of these remote towns, they never imagined to see even a second-class minor official. Now they see the senior officials reach out to them and go and visit them. This is really significant. It's highly valuable. When you go there for yourself and see and feel this, the problems on the ground, then you have this incentive and encouragement to try to remove these problems. But this is the very same thing. Social justice, we're moving toward that. Look at the life of the officials. What you see in the world, they have this aristocratic and luxurious lives when they come to office as president or as other senior officials elsewhere in the world. You see, there is a great upheaval in their life when they come to power. In our country, that's not the case. People like me, we need to actually adjust our lives based on the weakest strata of our society. We have not been able to do this, but the lives of our officials in Iran are like middle class average, sometimes even below the average or middle class. This is really important and valuable. If you look at this, what's government doing in distributing justice bonds and targeting the subsidies and distribution, equal distribution, if this can be put into practice the right way, this is really valuable. These subsidies that the government is paying, was paying for power, well, a family that's using a chandelier in their homes and they consume more electricity, you can see a great difference between that person and the family that uses one or two lamps. Well, the richer one used the subsidies more. This was not fair. This is going to be stopped when it comes to bread, to gasoline, and other things. It's the same story. We withstood. Islamic establishment insisted on the slogan of social justice. The other point is fighting arrogance and not bowing to pressure. This was hard, but the Islamic Republic managed to do this tough task successfully. There were many individuals since the very beginning of the Islamic Revolution. It's now that the revolution is victorious. Well, that's enough. Let's go settle our issues with Americans. Well, that meant that the slogan of fighting oppression should be dispensed with. They encouraged this. In the course of time, there were individuals who were pursuing the same, actually to go and move in the lines of the U.S. and take refuge with the U.S. and be obedient to them. This means selling the land of Palestine. This means neglecting and ignoring the crimes being committed by America in Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere. This means closing your eyes and all the pain that America is practicing across the world. That means resisting rejection. Normalizing ties means that the people of Iran won't be able to explicitly oppose anything. And even beyond this, gradually it means they have to actually kind of abide by Americans' ideas and opinions. Well, this was hard, but thanks to the blessings of God, the world people got attracted to you. This is steadfastness of you, Iran, is the past 32 years, insistence on the basic slogans of the Islamic Revolution. This was the great blessing that you see. You're being watched upon as a great nation. Your officials, when they visit various world nations, they are so highly and warmly welcomed. When the popularity of officials are calculated, those people in charge, and your officials, your own officials, rank high. So the Iran nation has set an example, and now you can see the signs of that. This feature is part of those characteristics that would not emerge unless with the lapse of time, this issue of steadfastness and insistence on our principles. Today in Egypt, it's the echo of your voice being heard over there.
دوره انقلاب رئیس جمهور آمریکا
American President during our Islamic Revolution, the one in charge as President, U.S. President, a few days ago he had this interview. He said that these voices that they're not being heard now, they sound familiar to me. That means what's happening in Cairo today was actually those voices were heard in Tehran during the time he was U.S. President. This is being judged by the world. Today in our 10-day dawn period, kind of different. So the rally on the February 11th, on the day of the Islamic Revolution, this will add to your victories.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا أبو القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الأطيبين الأطهرين المنتجبين سيما علي أمير المؤمنين والصديقة الطاهرة سيدة نساء العالمين والحسن والحسين سبت الرحمة الإمام الهدى
فاطمة الزهراء may peace be upon علي سنة حسين محمد سنة علي
وعلي بن موسى
وجعفر سنة
محمد
may peace be upon all of the family of the prophet
حججك على عبادك وأمنائك في بلادك وصلى على أئمة
May peace be upon all of the Muslims and those who protect the weak. May peace be upon the faithful.
أوصيكم عباد الله بتقوى الله. بار دیگر همه شما برادران و خواهران عزیز را و خودم را.
One more time, I would recommend all of you, brothers and sisters, and myself to divine piety. A few moments I would like to speak about the developments happening in Tunisia, I mean Egypt, developments unfolding there. These incidents are really important. This is an earthquake. If the people of Egypt, with the blessing and assistance of God, if they are able to push this through and move it forward, then what will happen to the U.S. policies in the region will be an irreparable defeat for the U.S. Today, more than, let's say, even the officials that have fled from Tunisia or Egypt, but more than those officials, even Israeli officials are more concerned. The Zionist enemies are concerned more than anyone else. They are aware that if Egypt ceases its alliance with them, and if it assumes its real status, what great happening will take place in the region? These are forecast by our late Imam. Those things will materialize. Therefore, these incidents are of paramount importance. And the analyses across the world. They try to ignore the main cause for these uprisings. They make mention of economic and non-economic issues that, of course, are important. They have their own role, but the major driving force for this great popular movement, first in Tunisia and then its peak in Egypt, this was this feeling of humility and humiliation that the people feel because of the performance of their officials. People felt humiliated, they felt they were insulted. This inauspicious, unlike his name, official in Egypt, he brought humiliation to the people of Egypt. Let me first mention a few points about Tunisia. In Tunisia, the fugitive president, Ben Ali, he was absolutely dependent on America. We have reports that he was dependent on the CIA. See how hard it is for a world nation to see that the head of a state of a nation, so arrogant and so selfish president that he was, he was highly arrogant and selfish. He was actually officially acting as a servant of the U.S. and puppet, and for years he served them, and strongly he resisted issues of the people, especially taking issues against the religion. In Tunisia, that's a Muslim country, it has a high record, Islamic record, and there were great Islamic scholars in the Islamic civilization. They emanated from Tunisia. In such a country, people during the rule of Ben Ali, if they wanted to go to mosques, they needed to have special IDs. They needed to have permits to go to mosque. It was issued by the government. Not everyone was issued those cards and permits. To go to a mosque, you were not allowed to go. We were not allowed to hold prayers, even individually, let alone congregational prayers. Wearing of hijab was officially banned. Then one major incentive of the people was their demands for Islam. So we saw as soon as this traitor fled the country and the situation was resolved, then university students, girls, went to universities observing the Islamic hijab. This shows the deep incentive which is of Islamic nature. This is what Western analysts want to hide. They want to push it under carpet. Another incentive is dependence on the U.S. So this is important for Americans. Do not want this to be mentioned, that the major, the reason for the uprising of people of Tunisia and then later on the Columbus we can see in Egypt, the main reason is dependence. This is the very fact on the ground. Of course, in Tunisia, there was a superficial and cosmetic change. He fled, but his administration is in power. We hope that Tunisian people will try to pay attention to the situation so that, God forbid, enemy would be able to deceive them. Now, as for Egypt, Egypt is a really important country. Well, I should first mention a few points. Egypt is the first Islamic country that became familiar with Western culture. The first Islamic country in the 18th century, late 18th century, that was when they started to get familiar with the Western culture, with the European culture. So it was the first of Islamic countries that got familiar with the European culture in the late 18th century, and it was the first Islamic country that withstood that Western culture and actually came to realize its shortcomings, and it resisted against it. Sayyid Jamaluddin the Great,
اسلام خواه شجاع مبارز
اسلامیک Islam, and he was a great struggler. The best place he found for his struggles was Egypt. His followers, Muhammad Abduh and others, they started these Islamic movements in Egypt. They're great scholars, political, cultural scholars. They were all prominent and they were seeking freedom. Egypt acted as the leader of the Arab world politically. For a long time, Arab countries looked at Egypt. And they followed Egypt. It was acting as a leader of the Arab world. Independence, seeking freedom in that country, was being demanded. Of course, there were not good opportunities for those people in Egypt, apart from a short period of time. Egypt was, let's say, the first or the largest country that, together with Syria, when it came to the issue of Palestine, they entered war. Other Islamic countries, none of them, took part in the wars against Israel. Egypt used its army, its people, took all its support and fought Israel. First, they were not successful. One of them in 1967, one of them is 1973. This is Egypt. So it was a shelter actually for Palestinians, or maybe even for a large number of revolutionary elements from other countries. They looked upon Egypt like this. They would come to Egypt and base their activities there. Such a country, for 30 years, it is in the hands of a person who is not only seeking freedom, he's antagonistic toward freedom. Is not only against Zionists, but he is following and he's a collaborator and he's being kind of trusted and serving the interests of the Zionists. A country where one day was bearing the flag of anti-Zionist campaign, and it is an example and hope inspiring for the whole Arab world, then this country, the situation turned in such a way that Israelis and the Zionist enemies actually, in all the anti-Palestinian activities, they relied on the assistance of Mr. Mubarak. He helped them in the war on Gaza. If Mr. Mubarak hadn't helped the Israelis, they would never be able to siege Gaza. For 4 years they have been under siege in Gaza. In the 22-day war, 2 years ago, men, women, children in Gaza, they came under the fire of Israel. They lost their lives, their homes were destroyed. And they did not allow other aid caravans, not from Egypt, but from elsewhere. They did not allow aid caravans from elsewhere. They wanted to go through Egypt, like the caravan from Iran. They wanted to go get their assistance to the Gazans. Egypt did not allow that. The Mr. Hosni Mubarak didn't allow this, actually. This was the situation in Egypt. People in Egypt decided they had enough. Because of the support of the present administration in Egypt for Israel, and because it was following in the footsteps of Israel and fully for obedience to the US, they feel that they are humiliated.
عامل اصلی حرکت
so the major, this is the major reason for the movement.
مردمی هستن مسلمان
حرکت از نماز Muslim people they start from fighters, they start from the movement from mosques, they chant slogans of Allah Akbar, God is great. These are religious slogans being chanted in Egypt, and the strongest struggle and movement is the Islamic movement over there, and now they want to remove this feeling of humiliation. This is the major reason. Western world does not allow this. They don't want to see this analysis spread and be spoken about among world circles. They always refer to economic issues. Of course, economic problems and rules are a problem, but the servitude of a person like Hosni Mubarak toward America never pushed Egypt even one step toward economic flourish. 40% of the people of Egypt, more than 80 million people, 40% are below poverty line. Even in Cairo, the capital city, based on tangible reports that I have, I have heard up to 2-3 million people, but we know that several thousands of people in Cairo, they live in graveyards out of poverty. They have no homes. They take shelter at cemeteries. This is such a situation, situation of life over there. It's people a problem with their subsistence. That means America, for this servitude, they didn't even reward Mubarak for this servitude. And today they're not rewarding him either. Every hour that passes, the moment he flees Egypt, Mubarak should know that the first door that will be closed will be the doors of America. They won't allow him in. Like they never allowed Ben Ali from Tunisia, like they never allowed Mohammad Reza from Iran. This is how they are. These
برای دوستی آمریکا و رفاقت با آمریکا
و whose hearts are beating for serving the interests of America, they should open their eyes and see these instances. These are devils.
در دعای صحیفه سجادیه
in the fourth Imam prayer book he says that when Satan
به تعبیر بنده میخنده به من پشت میکنه به من
when I pray, then Satan turns back on me. This is how the Americans honor they're after their own interests, and through these weak people they push their interests. Slogans of death to America.
Albate Emrud.
Of course, today, Americans are highly agitated. Israelis are more agitated and concerned regarding Egypt. They're after a cure, after a remedy, but they will never find one. They are trying to deceive the people. They speak of supporting Egyptian people. Americans are also Mubarak. He needs to go as soon as possible. Well, it depends how the Egyptian people act and how they decide. Addressing our Arab brothers, I have written something.
In the name of God the Merciful, may peace be upon the sons of our Islamic Ummah everywhere. May peace be upon the Islamic arena. Now, of course, the Islamic arena is witnessing a great period, a very, very important turning point, a fatal period which could change the equation in the region, change the equation in favor of Islam and in favor of the people. And this event could bring back dignity and honor to the Arab people and the Islamic people. And this could also take away the dust of tens of years of what the West did and what America did to these people, to these great people.
من ظلم واستهانة وإذلال
the oppression and the humiliation
إن
which America did to these people. This event, this miraculous event began by the Tunisian people, and it reached its highest point with the Egyptian people, the great Egyptian people.
The people in the West held their breath.
The people in the Islamic world held their breath as well, but for different reasons. And they are monitoring very closely what will happen in the great land of Egypt. This great country of the last century, the country of Muhammad Abdu and Sayyid Jamal, the Egypt of Zaghloul, the Egypt of Ahmed Shawqi, the Egypt of Abdel Nasser and Sheikh Hassan al-Banna, the Egypt of 1967 and 1973. They are watching how high the flag of Egypt will be raised. Although this flag, if this flag is not raised, this will lead to a very difficult period. And if this flag, however, is raised high, it will be reached the high skies, and this will be the beginning of a great period. The Tunisian people were able to kick out the Americanized president, Zain al-Abidin bin Ali, he who was against religion. But it is wrong to think that this is the result which we want. The regime of betrayal, the spying regime, has not overthrown when its remnants or its symbols go out of the country. If the symbols of the same regime take their place, so it's not about a certain person leaving, because symbols of his regime could simply take his place. The Islamic revolution of Iran, of course, those who are against the Islamic revolution strive time and again to put us in a trap. However, the vigilance of the people and the vigilance of its leader realized the plans of the enemies, and hence we prevented these plans from achieving their aims. Now, regarding Egypt is a unique example, because Egypt in the Arab world is unique from any other country. Egypt is the first country in the Islamic world which got to know the Arab culture, and it is also the first country which realized the danger of the other cultures and confronted this danger. Egypt is the first Arab country which established an independent state after World War II. And Egypt defended its national interests in securing the Suez Canal. And Egypt is the first country which stood with all of its energy, which stood side by side with the Palestinians. And Egypt became known in the Islamic world as the place where the Palestinians resort to when they are in need. Mr. Jamal was not an Egyptian, however, he only saw that the Egyptian Muslim people were the ones who really understood his concern. He found only Egyptians understood his concern. The Egyptian people have proven themselves at the times of political confrontation and religious struggle, and the Egyptians have made their stances throughout history. Muhammad Abdu and his students, and Sa'd Zaghloul and his students, these people were not normal people. They were very, very high-ranking intellectuals, courageous people, people of vigilance, and Egypt should be proud of them and people who are like them. Egypt, with this cultural and religious depth, and with this political depth, Egypt reached a very, very important stage, and reached a leadership role in the Arab world. The biggest crime committed by the ruling party in Egypt was that It took this country down. It took it down from this very, very high level to a low level, to a tool in the hands of America, in America's political game in the region. This earthquake which we see today in the, by the Egyptian people, this is the appropriate response to the great betrayal, the great betrayal committed by the dictator against his people. The arena now is full of a revolution, is full of an awakening of the Egyptian people, and the Egyptians are expressing their opinion, their stance in this perspective. Anyone who knows Egypt well will understand that Egypt today is defending its dignity and defending its honor. Egypt has been subject to a lot of betrayal. And people at this high level of dignity, they have been subject to a lot of harm from the enemies. The stance of Egypt towards the Palestinian cause is an example, sets an example of the position of Egypt. Palestine, for tens of years, Palestine has become the most important issue in the region, and the issues of this region are related to one another, are tied to one another, and hence no country and no people can believe that their destiny is not related to the Palestinian cause.
And
there are two sides to the equation. Either we support Palestine and its legitimate struggle, its struggle for justice, or to stand on the other side. The people of the region have shown their stance ever since the beginning of this situation, of this plight. Whenever any ruling regime goes towards supporting the Palestinian cause, they get the support of their people and of the Arab people. Any regime supporting Palestinians get the support of its people, and Egypt has experience in this in the 1960s and the beginning of the 1970s. However, when the Egyptians stood on the other side, the people then take a stance against them. Egypt, of course, has shown the difference between the people and the regime after the humiliating agreement in Camp David. The Egyptian people did all they could to help the Palestinians in 1967 and in 1973. However, after that, the Egyptians, with their own two eyes, saw that their leaders quickly ran towards spying and working for America, to the extent whereby Egypt became an ally, a loyal ally for the Zionist regime. America's control on Egyptian's leaders changed and took away all the efforts which were made by the Egyptian people to support Palestine. They wiped these efforts away, and the Egyptian regime hence became an enemy for the Palestinians and the biggest protector of the Zionist aggressors. At the same time, Syria, which was a partner in Egypt, a partner for Egypt in 1967 and 1973, Syria preserved its independent stances and held on to its independent stances despite the American pressures which were applied against this country, against Syria. And the Egyptian regime, this spying regime, saw for the first time, its people actually, the Egyptian people saw for the first time that this regime, the Egyptian regime, during the war on Gaza, stood side by side with the Israeli front, and the Egyptians were never hesitant to provide assistance to the Zionists, and they even did all they could. They pursued and they exerted their efforts to support the Zionist front. The history will not forget that Hosni Mubarak, he himself, is the one who stood strongly side by side with the Israelis and the Americans in Israel's war against Gaza. Women were killed, men were killed, children were killed in that war. For 22 days of bomb, of shelling, the people were killed. And before that and after that, the siege continued. The siege was on Gaza. The siege was imposed on Gaza. Look at the pains which the Egyptians witnessed, the Egyptian people witnessed, the pains they felt during this period. The television screens showed us the feelings of the Egyptians when they were crying because of their incapability, because they were prevented from going and helping and providing assistance to their Palestinian brothers.
لقد بلغ السيل الزبا.
It reached the high extent whereby these people, the Egyptian people, can no longer put up with this situation. And what we are witnessing now in Cairo and what we are witnessing in the other Egyptian cities is an explosion of this sacred anger, an explosion of these piled up problems, these piled up feelings of the freedom loving Egyptian men and women. The feelings of the Egyptians over the past years have now blown up because of this spying regime, this anti-Islamic Egyptian regime. The awakening of the Islamic Egyptian people is an Islamic movement, an Islamic liberation movement. And I, in the name of the Iranian people and in the name of the Iranian government, I salute the Egyptian people and I salute the Tunisian people. And I call on God that He help you and bring about a victory for you. I feel proud for your awakening, for what is happening now. My dear brothers, my dear sisters, to the Egyptian brothers and sisters, to the Tunisian brothers and sisters, I say there is no doubt that the awakening of the people is related to your geographic situation, the political situation and the cultural situation of these countries. And we cannot expect that in Egypt or in Tunisia or in any other country, we cannot expect that the same thing will happen as what happened here in Iran. We cannot expect that these countries will witness what Iran witnessed 30 years ago. However, there are also certain commonalities, certain common points. The experience of each people can benefit other people. The experience we had here could benefit you. And we find it is beneficial that we tell you about certain experience we here have. First of all, the awakening of the people is actually a war between two wills, the will of the people and the will of the enemies of the people. And the side which is more determined and which can put up with more pains will in the end achieve victory. God says, those who say, we believe in God and depended on God, God sends them the angels so that they not fear. Do not be concerned and expect heaven will be your destiny. And God also spoke to his prophet and said, for this reason always pray to God and call to God and do not resort to their means. The enemy is striving by force and by tricks. The enemy is trying to harm your will, to destroy your will. So beware of the weakness of your will. Do not make your will be weak. Second of all, the enemy is trying to create despair and trying to make you believe you cannot achieve your aims. However, the promise of God says that we want to help those who were oppressed in the land and make them people who in the end will achieve their aims. So be sure, be confident, be totally confident and do not be hesitant in the promise of God. They say God will make those who he wants achieve victory. God is strong. The third point, the enemy is using its security forces against you in order to put fear and intimidation in your hearts and to create chaos. Do not fear them. You are stronger than these people who have been paid for. You now are in a stage which is very similar to the stage where God spoke to his prophet. When he told his prophet, when you have 20 people who are patient and who believe in God, they can defeat 200 people. So hence, if you depend on God, if you rely on your youngsters, you can overcome any problems. You can overcome any chaos and any attempts to terrorize or to intimidate. The fourth point is that the weapon of the enemy, the most important weapon of the people to confront the tyrants and to confront the spies, is to show cohesion and to unite. This is the strongest weapon the people have. The enemy is striving with different ways. The enemy is striving to rip apart your cohesion, to divide you. This is what the enemy is trying to do. The enemy is also rising slogans and is speaking in a certain way to divide you. So for this reason, maintain, hold on to your unity around religion, your unity around saving the country against the spies of the enemy, and hold on to God and do not divide yourselves. Number five, do not believe in the game which is being played by the West and America. Do not believe in their role. Do not believe in their political maneuvers. These political maneuvers which are taking place in the midst of your awakening. Just a few days ago, these people, the West, I mean the Americans, were supporting the corrupt regime. And now, after they are sick of preserving him, now they are speaking about the rights of the people. Just a few days ago, they were supporting him. They were supporting the Egyptian regime. So they are trying to replace one spy with another. They are trying to focus the spotlight on certain faces to impose the rule of the spies on you. This is an insult to your feelings. So beware of this and do not accept anything less than an independent regime, an independent popular regime which believes in Islam. Number six, the religious clerics, the religious figures, the people of Al-Azhar's mosque, with their history of struggle, they must also awaken and play their role. When the people begin with their revolution, when they begin with their revolution from the mosques and from the Friday prayers, and when they raise the slogan of Allahu Akbar, God is great, it is expected from the religious clerics also to take a stance. And this is something which everyone should expect, a stance in support of the people. Number seven, the Egyptian army, which has on its chest the medal of participation in two wars at least against the Zionist enemy. The Egyptian army today is being subject to a historic test, a big historic test. The enemy wants the Egyptian army to oppress the people. And if this occurs, God forbid, this will be a black mark in this proud army, a black mark and a black hole which cannot be filled. The Egyptian army must focus its eyes on the Zionist enemy, not on the Egyptian people. They must fight the Zionist enemy, not the Egyptian people. There is no doubt that some members, some forces from the Egyptian people, and the Egyptian army is from the people. And I think the Egyptians will join the people. The Egyptian army will join the people again. And this same experience will be repeated in Egypt once again. Number eight, the last point. America, which supported the agents and the spies for many years against the will of the Egyptian people, is not in a position which allows it to enter or to intervene in Egypt's situation. Look with doubt, always be suspicious, always be suspicious regarding the American role and American intervention. Always be suspicious of any American step, and do not trust any American steps or measures. My dear brothers and sisters, we can understand very clearly that the awakening of the Egyptian people is from the people, and also is being directed or led by opposition forces and certain political intellectuals, and there is cooperation amongst them, amongst these opposition forces and political intellectuals, and we hope that God will assist them. But what we said, what I said, is our experience, and I, as your brother in religion and based upon my religious commitment, I have spoken to you about the experience which we have had. You people of Egypt, the media outlets of the enemy will always strive to tarnish the image, and they will always try to say that Iran wants to intervene. Iran wants to intervene and wants to create Shiites or convert people into the Shiite sect in Egypt, and is striving to intervene in Egypt. These are lies. These are lies which have filled our ears for 30 years. The aim of these lies is to divide amongst the people, to divide the people and to prevent these people from helping one another. And these slogans, this talk and this rhetoric is being repeated by other people as well. Others who want problems, who are against us, always repeat these slogans and repeat this rhetoric. These lies will not prevent us from doing our duty, according to Islam, our responsibility according to Islam. Of course, God will always stand with us, and I say in the end, in the name of God the Merciful, people who are faithful and do good and who continue to struggle for good and show perseverance, they will succeed. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.